You're listening to A Light at the Other Side, where we're sharing stories of resilience, healing, and hope. We share the experiences of adoptees, domestic violence survivors, military veterans, and more, so some episodes may contain potentially triggering accounts of trauma. To fully appreciate the light, we must sometimes peer into the dark. Hi, and welcome back. On today's episode, we're going to be sharing military stories. I have a publication, Served, that features the work of military veterans. Today I'm going to be sharing two pieces from one of Served's many talented writers, Brett Farrick. Brett is an Iraqi war veteran who served in the Marine Corps, and he writes about his military experiences with such passion. I hope to do his words justice. Dragon Fire by Brett Farrick. In our world, there are gates to hell in which no key is required for entry. There is no way of knowing where these gates are anchored, and enough hate generated in just the right location can coerce them open. Beyond those gates, dragons sleep lightly, ready to unleash flame and fury in an instant. When I served in the Marine Corps, I was involved in a massive urban assault in 2004. The residential neighborhoods in the city comprised of numerous two-story houses constructed from block and mortar, which were surrounded by perimeter walls about 10 feet high. As infantrymen, we would move house to house, building to building, clearing them out one at a time, and subsequently chasing our enemy to the end of each city block. Inevitably, the last house on the block was always intense. Here is the story of a block of six houses, our encounter with a dragon, and a journey through hell. House number one. We wait patiently in the street as another squad takes the lead. We will leapfrog down the road, alternating houses in a twisted game of Russian roulette. Across the street, a stray dog enters a building under a slightly opened garage door. Moments later, a massive explosion sends the garage door and a wrought iron window cage flying in our direction. They smash into the wall a few feet away from where we sit. No sign of the dog who sacrificed his life for us. We continue to wait. House number two. Our turn. A thud and a crash as the point man takes a shot at the entry door's lock set with a grenade launcher. Eight Marines follow behind, racing the screaming grenade to the front door in order to avoid being caught in an open courtyard. It is better to absorb the blast as the grenade annihilates the doorway than to be caught standing still in the open, which we know by now to be a recipe for violent death. Hands pry the wreckage as we race through the doorway, yet another fatal front in which you do not want to stick around. You can do this 1,000 times without ever getting used to the uncertainty that comes with crossing that threshold. Either death or silence awaits beyond. It's a toss-up. This time it was silence. The interior of the home is a palatial beauty, with the distinct smell of burnt fuse, dust, and fractured concrete in the air, a scent that tingles the dragon's nostrils. The house looks like it could have been inhabited that morning. Fine furniture, end tables with ornate lamps, decorative sabers hanging above a mantle, curtains still hung. The heaviness presses on our chests as we ascend the staircase to the upper level, traversing yet another opportune kill zone. But still, silence. On the upper level, drawers are full of clothing. An Anna Kournikova poster is pinned to the wall of what must have been the room of a teenage boy. Finding nothing of interest other than that intriguing poster, we return to the courtyard in a more casual manner. Gunshots ring out from the next block over. The rate of fire is picking up. A tank parked just outside our courtyard fires a main gun round down the street in the direction we are heading. The gun's concussive blast brings us to our knees as the mortar joints in the surrounding walls pop out of place. The tank round spirals down the road at supersonic speeds, followed by a ghostly swirl of dust. A vehicle had rounded the corner and rushed the armored beast. As we move down the road to the next courtyard gate, we see a burning heap of twisted metal where this vehicle and its suicide crew met their fate. The dragons stir. House number three. More of the same for the first squad. Crash, rush, silence. On to the next one. We are up again. House number 4. Nothing, but it smells different. Someone was here moments ago. House number 5. The radio tells us that our other squad is about to breach the next courtyard gate. Then it happens. Gunfire rips off and doesn't stop. The chatter of gunfire makes an unmistakable sound which tells us that Marines are not firing these shots, they are receiving them. We are barely able to support them from the rooftop of the house we just cleared. All we can see is a fury of smoke and dust and a river of blood flowing past the gate. Ricocheted rounds make a variety of sounds as they glance off of the concrete walls around us. Others crack loudly as they pass through the air by our ears. Still can't see. This lasted for about 10 minutes, or maybe it was a year. Our brothers below are finally able to get a foothold in this house. We fired so many rounds into that home that the curtains and upholstered furniture began to ignite. Carcinogenic plumes of black smoke poured from the windows of the lower floors. 8 Marines entered that courtyard. 6 exited from the roof. The roar of the flames is evidence that a sleeping dragon has awakened. House number 6. The last house on the block, and there is no doubt what awaits beyond this threshold. The final stand at the gate to hell, and it's my turn-on point. Marines are already firing rapidly into this house from every available vantage point. An equal number of rounds are coming out. Supporting fire shifts to the upper windows so that we can make an entrance below. As I rush that door, an explosion drops me to my knees. Like many times before, I fired a grenade into the lock set, but this time fragments of the door along with a barrage of concrete and shrapnel came back at me. A piece of metal penetrated my leg just below my kneecap and tunneled almost all the way through. The Marine behind me pulls me up to my feet as he runs past and we enter the dragon's lair together. In hell, all men face a common enemy, dragonfire. The threat of flying bullets was replaced with the heat of dragon's breath. Dragonfire exploded through the lower level. It roared as it climbed walls and scaled the ceilings. Paint blistered on walls before igniting. Soon we were wrapped in the devil's cloak as black smoke pressed us down to the floor. Lucifer's dragon blocked our exit, so we reluctantly ascended the staircase to the upper level. Upstairs, we saw that we no longer had a mortal enemy. We quickly counted the bodies of the men who had helped us open this portal to hell. When men die in a state of panic, their eyes will often remain open. You can tell by the animalistic look in their petrified stare that whatever made them human has left them. Whether or not you believe in an afterlife, I can tell you with certainty that people and dogs have souls. There is proof in the eyes. When we take our last breath, that soul departs. Where it goes will remain a mystery until we take that journey ourselves. Any anger I felt towards these men moments ago faded. Where did their souls go? Their bodies would soon be engulfed by dragon fire, but would their souls remain trapped here forever, trapped in the hell on earth which we created? What seemed to be heaven's gate stood between us, the roof, and breathable air. With some effort, the door opened and we were free. Black smoke billowed from the doorway behind us and hissed at our feet through visible cracks in the roof. We could feel the heat through the soles of our boots as the rooms below flashed over. The dragon had devoured all that remained in the netherworld below and bellowed a roar to warn us that he will be waiting behind the next set of gates. Looking across the city from this elevated vantage point, I could see that there were dozens of houses spewing toxic smoke into the atmosphere. The dragons inside them would eventually drift off to sleep as these fires subsided and the gates began to close. We had entered that house with 7 and counted 9 bodies upstairs. Outnumbered, we should have never escaped. Unless, of course, our souls never did. More rounds snap through the air as they fly past our ears. Time to keep moving. And when he goes to heaven, St. Peter, he will tell, another Marine reporting, "Sir, I've done my time in hell." Grave marker of Marine Private William Cameron, Guadalcanal, 1943. What If by Brett Farrick. Life is a high-risk form of choose-your-own-adventure. Unlike the books, in which we can flip back and take our story in a different direction if we don't like the outcome, we are eternally committed to the paths we chose. We are only able to look back on those moments in hindsight and ask, what if? No amount of page turning can bring us back to that point of divergence. I don't look back at any part of my life with regrets, and I really wouldn't want to change anything about my life now. But looking back over the years, there is one moment in particular that prompted this curious question. What if? Following a short leave after boot camp, I was heading back down to North Carolina for another 3 months of infantry training at Camp Lejeune. The last 3 months were a blur. Having joined the Marine Corps in the wake of 9/11, I had been running on pure adrenaline. As someone who always valued seeing the country, I elected to ride down on a Greyhound bus. This nearly empty bus pulled out onto the city streets just before sunset on a beautiful spring evening. It had been months since I really sat back and just let the sights and sounds carry me off to tranquility. The mixture of sweet spring air, the intoxicating smell of engine exhaust, and the waning light reflecting off the surrounding buildings will repose the most unsettled of souls. Having just popped Pearl Jam's 10 into my Walkman, I was truly at peace. I had always loved music, especially if it came out of Seattle. Then it happened. I suddenly realized that I had come to a fork in the road of life and committed myself to one path over the other. There was no turning back. At that startling moment, I saw a young man of about 20 years old walking down the street with a backpack and a guitar case. Along with the guitar case, he seemed to carry a sense of freedom. I have no idea who he was or where he was going, but his image will haunt me forever. It was as if I was watching a version of myself walk down another path, a path which I would never intersect again. He chose his path, I chose mine. From that point on, I experienced brutality, death, and destruction. I would watch as close friends breathed their last breath. I would take the last breath from others. When violent fighting erupts, the heart speeds up, but time slows down. There have been fleeting moments locked in time when I would picture this young man walking towards me, oblivious to the violence around him, with an outstretched hand asking me to join him on another path. What if? Wow. Sometimes these stories just chill me to my core. I so appreciate Brett's work. He was a writer I sought out to contribute to served, as his is just the kind of powerful account of military combat that is so important in cross-examining the narrative of what it means to be a veteran in the United States. I'm always seeking more military stories, so as always, if you'd like to contribute your story to the podcast, you can email me at thelightattheotherside@gmail.com or go to my website, melissacorrigan.com, and contact me that way. I highly recommend, again, that you hop on Medium and head to the publication Served to check out more stories from veterans. Thanks for tuning in, and I do hope you'll come back next week. In closing, I'm going to leave you with this poem by Second Lieutenant George Bruner of the U.S. Army. Poem of a Soldier. You praise the man I was and curse the man I am. Depending on which God you love, who I will may be damned. Yet still I'll sell my soul for you. I'll save us all from our worst selves. I know no other love than this. I fear no other hell. I am what I am because I was made to be. I raise the mountains, bring them down, and push the seven seas. I reap the grapes of wrath. I am the hand that feeds. I am the brimstone falling from the angel wings. I damn the damned and bless the weak. For the lame walk and for the mute speak. The poor and oppressed find their rest in me. I break the chains and bring forth the free. The destroyer of worlds, I am become of death. I am enveloping nights, approaching bayonets. I am the darkest valley where the sword is wet. The shadow of death is my silhouette. I was forged in a fire lit long ago, born of a crucible not my own.
Yet by this birthright in man am I mold. I am strength multiplied by a thousandfold. I am the photos of loved ones, now nothing but memories. I am folded flags, torn, tattered, and history. Yet it is I who hold high these in Pyrrhic victory. I am the idea that we've died for all of eternity. I am the scorching heat. I am the bitter cold. I am the broken sleep that shakes your soul. I am the naive youth and the fearful old. I am the hell you pray you'll never know. I am a soldier and no one asked me to be. I raised my right hand and said, God, send me. I am the man that the boy I was wanted to be, the incarnate nightmare of my enemy's dreams. I am the comforting safety we've known at home. I am the cogs of wars we hope we don't. Pray you never need me, yet when you do, I am also the fear which caused you to. I am the cherubim and original sin. I rule the fallen world and the broken men. From the depths of the waters to the roaring winds, I am new beginnings and imminent ends.